I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. Today, I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. This week, we've got editorial director Anna, plus writers Gus and James. All right then, James, tell me, what is going on in this week's issue?
Well, Bex, we've got absolutely loads of stuff packed into this issue. We've got a feature on the new Minions film, The Rise of Gru, which is an origin story set in the 1970s. We've got a well-being page all about how to create a calm corner, very important. Tips on how to get involved in wakeboarding, which I've never tried, but apparently it's like a mix between surfing, water skiing and snowboarding. You can find out why tropical birds are more colourful than other birds. Why a 92-year-old is taking a maths GCSE. The Spanish city issuing £640 fines for weeing in the sea. And my personal favourite story, which is a London artist who's making art from bruised bananas. And you have to see the pictures. They actually look pretty amazing.
Oh my goodness, that is a lot of stuff. Love that. Thank you, James. I'll be sure to get my mitts on a magazine. So if you want to find out more about The Week Junior, ask a grown-up to go to theweekjunior.co.uk/podcast and use the code podcast to sign up for a 6-week free trial. So, onto this week's episode of the Week Junior Show, we'll find out about a historic statue, the return of the world's greatest festival, and a major football tournament kicking off in England. Plus, we'll have a debate all about whether Minnie Mouse should swap her famous red dress for a trouser suit. But before all of that, given that we'll be talking about Minnie Mouse, I want to know which Disney character would we all like to meet in real life? James, you can go first.
Well, I found this really tough because there are just so many Disney characters I would like to meet. So I was thinking if I got to meet the genie from Aladdin, then I can not only meet him, who's a really cool character just on his own, but I could also get my three wishes and get to meet three other Disney characters. So that might be cheating, but that's definitely who I would choose.
First of all, definitely cheating. Secondly, I thought you might say that. I figured that one out. Anna, how about you?
Well, like James, it's quite hard to decide who I'd like to meet most. But having thought about it long and hard and consulted with my children, I've decided on Mulan. One, because my younger daughter is her biggest fan. And two, because she's just very cool, very brave, very fearless, and proves that females are equal to males.
Yeah, good choice. Gus, what are you going for?
I'm going to go for a slightly left field choice. I'd like to meet Claude Frollo from The Hunchback of Notre Dame. He's very evil, but he's also very smart and he's got a great singing voice, which is the best thing any Disney character can have.
Controversially going for a baddie. Okay, Gus, I see what you're doing there. I found this one very tricky, but I think I'm going to go for Goofy because Goofy was my favourite character growing up and I always wanted to give him a hug. Right now it's time for real or rubbish. James, I believe you've taken over the reins, so tell me, what is the story you're trying to trick me with this week?
This week's story is, well, we're heading into July, we're heading into the summer, so lots of us might be going to the beach, and we might even try using an inflatable dinghy in the sea just to paddle around in. But one man has taken inflatable dinghies to an entire new extreme. He's flown in one over the Pacific Ocean. So this is Ben Neal, a photographer from Australia, who spent 2 months building a homemade aircraft. He used 8,000 separate parts, and he used a dinghy as the main part because it allowed him to take off and land on water. He described his flying boat as a photography platform, using it to take amazing pictures of the Solomon Islands, which is a group of islands in the South Pacific, from the sky. So is this story of a flying dinghy true, or is it just a flight of fancy?
Oh my goodness. So dinghies are tiny, tiny little boats, right?
Tiny boats, and this one is inflatable, so that means it's the kind of thing you can just buy from a shop and fill it with air and you're away, but not usually used as flying vessels.
Yeah, boats tend not to fly. That has kind of blown my mind a little bit. I can't get my head around the idea of a flying boat. It seems like a Disney film in itself, to be honest. And he's made it on his own.
He has, apparently, yeah. Spent 2 months making it, his own kind of personal project. Yeah, I guess he just really wanted to see what would happen if a dinghy took to the skies.
I've heard of people, you know, travelling in boats, like tiny little boats they've made themselves, but not using a boat to fly. That seems a little bit ridiculous to me, but I'll have to have a little think. I don't know the answer to this. So if you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show, and we can find out the answer together. All right, then, it's time for our three most interesting stories from this week. Gus, what do you have for me today?
The government has unveiled a monument to the Windrush generation at Waterloo Station. The Windrush generation were people who came from territories controlled by the British Empire between 1948 and 1973, mostly from the Caribbean. While the statue is seen by many as a celebration of the Windrush generation and everything they've done for the country, for example, the statue creator Basil Watson said that he's seen members of the Windrush generation moved to tears by the statue. Some critics see it as ignoring the racism that many of the generation have experienced in this country.
Right, so was it expensive?
It did cost quite a lot of money, Bex, but a lot of people are saying that the government should have spent it on giving people compensation for the racism they've experienced from the government rather than just building more statues.
Yeah, I see. Okay, interesting stuff. Thanks, Gus. Anna, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I'm going to be telling you about Glastonbury Festival, Bex, which made a triumphant return to being staged for the first time since the pandemic began. So Glastonbury Festival is one of the biggest music events in the world, and it's held on a farm in Somerset in southwest England. And it was first held in 1970, so it would have been celebrating its 50th anniversary in 2020. But of course, the pandemic put paid to that. So this year was really, really important and really special because it was the first time it came back. It's an enormous event. It's full of colour. It's full of sculptures and music and art and activism, people wearing amazing outfits. Over 200,000 people attended it this year. And they saw over 1,000 performers over 3 days. So it really is huge. It's impossible really to imagine unless you've actually been there and seen it for yourself. There are so many people and so many different things going on. But this year's event actually set some records as well as being absolutely huge and brilliant. So this year, both the youngest and the oldest solo performers ever to have played at Glastonbury appeared on the main stage. And the youngest was 20-year-old Billie Eilish, who put on an amazing show. And the oldest was 80-year-old Paul McCartney, who also put on an absolutely incredible show. If you've ever wanted to imagine what it might be like to be 80 years old, dancing around on stage in front of thousands of people, you just have to watch that performance. It's really inspiring. Other people were there as well. Climate activist Greta Thunberg was there. She made an appearance on stage, making a real plea to the world to take action on climate change. It was just a hugely just joyous and wonderful celebration. Something that I found really interesting while we were researching this story was I learnt that when the first tickets for the very first Glastonbury Festival went on sale in 1970, they cost only £1, and that ticket actually included free milk from the farm. Only 1,500 people attended that year. This year, people paid almost £300 for a ticket, so times have really changed. But actually, if you think about it, 1,000 different performers, almost £300 a ticket actually works out quite good value for money if you're there for the whole weekend.
Oh, I think it's definitely worth it. I was a little bit jealous of people. It does sound like it was properly brilliant. I wish I could have been there.
Well, the good news, Bex, is that even if you weren't there, you can still kind of get part of the festival feeling. If you have a look at BBC iPlayer, there are loads of different performances and highlights from the event over the weekend. And the good news about that is you can sit and watch them from the comfort of your own sofa. You don't have to wade through mud or sleep in a tent. You can just sit on your sofa with a big bowl of snacks and watch your favourite artists on stage.
Yeah, I love that. No wellies necessary. Excellent stuff, Anna. Thank you. Now, James, how about you? What do you have for us this week?
Well, the Women's European Football Championships, or the Women's Euros, are kicking off this week. And they're being hosted in England this year. England's hosting it for the second time. They last hosted in 2005. And this competition was meant to take place last year, but it was delayed because of the pandemic. So it's now going to kick off this 6th of July. There's 16 teams involved, including England and Northern Ireland. And they'll be split into four groups of four to go into the knockout stage. 10 different stadiums are involved around the country, including Old Trafford in Manchester and Bramall Lane in Sheffield. And the final at Wembley on the 31st of July is actually expected to break the record for the highest crowd attendance at any Euros match ever, men's or women's. So pretty exciting.
Oh, that is exciting. So come on then, tell me, what are England and Northern Ireland's chances?
Well, it's Northern Ireland's first ever major tournament, so I don't think anyone's expecting much from them. They're definitely underdogs. They'll be hoping to get out of their group, which also includes England, actually. They'll be playing each other on the 15th of July. But England are actually one of the favourites. They've never won the competition, but they are definitely in the top contenders. And actually, their manager, Serena Wiegman, led the Netherlands to victory at the last Euros. They'll be hoping she can repeat that this time.
Oh, lovely stuff. I'll keep an eye out for it. Thank you, James. So as well as reading more about these stories in The Week Junior, you can also read a review of Trixie Pickle, Art Avenger, a hilarious and uplifting book about a girl who uses art to tackle her problems. It's written by Olaf Falafel, and here he is to tell us a little bit more.
Hello there, listeners of The Week Junior Show. My name is Olaf Falafel, and I am the author and illustrator of Trixie Pickle Art Avenger, which has been selected as Book of the Week in the current issue of the magazine. And I'm here to answer two very, very important questions. Firstly, do I like Marmite? Well, simple answer. Yes, I do like Marmite. I love it on toast. I especially love it on cheese on toast. Or under cheese on toast, if that's the right way of thinking about it. I'm not sure. Anyway, on to the second question. What was my favourite book growing up? Well, my favourite book when I was at school, when I guess I was sort of like 10-ish, was a joke book called the Ha Ha Bonk book. And it was by Janet and Alan Alberg. And you can still get it, because I've actually got myself a copy of it recently, because I was sort of reminiscing about it. And I mean, the title comes from the joke, what goes ha ha bonk? A man laughing his head off. And it is filled with really stupid jokes, but even more so, really stupid illustrations, which I like. There's lots of these kind of funny, funny little creatures and things. Like there's a fork with a sausage on it that kind of runs through the book, and there's a snail that has a house on its back. It was just really silly and really appealed to my stupid sense of humour. Anyway, that's all from me. Bye!
Ah, lovely stuff. I love Olaf. He's great. Now, on the subject of books, Anna, what is the latest on the Week Junior's Summer of Reading campaign?
So we launched our Summer of Reading campaign last week, and basically, for those of you who aren't aware of what this is our big annual challenge to children, and we're challenging you all to read three books over the summer holidays and to review them in three words and rate them out of three stars for a chance to win a Book Elite card and a big pile of books donated to us from all the brilliant children's publishers here in the UK. So to find out more about that, you can go to theweekjunior.co.uk/summer of reading. There you will find all the instructions for entering. You'll be able to download a brilliant book list of 50 books, which we put together with the literacy charity Book Trust. And there's also a link on that page through to our live event. We're doing an amazing live event this year for the first time ever at the British Library. And we have all kinds of amazing authors appearing there, including Phil Earle, who we're interviewing in this week's issue, Rob Bidulph and Shana Jackson, and many, many, many more. So do go to our landing page, theweekjunior.co.uk/summer of reading, and you'll be able to find out all about the challenge and all about the event.
Now it's time for the big debate. So this week we are asking whether Minnie Mouse should ditch her famed frock. Who can tell me a bit more?
Well, if you picture Minnie Mouse, the Disney character, in your head, you might imagine her in her iconic red and white polka dot dress. But actually, earlier this year, to celebrate Women's History Month and the 30th anniversary of Disneyland Paris, she had an outfit swap. So instead of the dress, she wore what's called a trouser suit, which is a women's outfit designed to look a bit like a traditional men's suit. They were first worn in the 1920s, and since then, they've become a kind of symbol for women's equality with men. So Minnie Mouse's trouser suit was blue. It was designed by a famous fashion designer called Stella McCartney, and it was quite controversial. It was only a temporary change, though. Some people are glad that Minnie Mouse is now back in her familiar dress, but others say that she should switch to trousers for good.
Now, I love this. I have actually seen this amazing trouser suit. It looks pretty cool, but I want to know what Anna and Gus think about this. So, Anna, you're going to go first. You're going to say why Minnie Mouse does need a change of outfit and a new wardrobe. You have 1 minute on the clock. So whenever you're ready, take it away.
Well, Bex, why shouldn't Minnie Mouse get a new outfit? Times have changed and so have fashions. And why should she be stuck in the past? The rest of us don't dress like it's still 1928. So why are people so upset at the prospect of bringing a much-loved character up to date? In any case, it's really old-fashioned to suggest that female characters should only wear pretty skirts and dresses. Girls and women are entitled to feel comfortable in their clothing. And anyway, Minnie's just a made-up mouse. Well, you might say she's just a made-up mouse, but she's also a role model to lots of young children, and it's really important that they see her wearing trousers too. A more modern outfit, like her very cool trouser suit, reflects modern times and reinforces the fact that girls and women can be and wear whatever they want. It's definitely time she ditched that frilly frock.
Wow, I mean, first of all, delightfully well under a minute, but very convincing there, Anna. That was very good. Gus is going to have his work cut out. Gus, whenever you're ready, take it away.
Well, a lot of people like Minnie's dress. It's very iconic. She's had it for almost a century. So why should she change now? And changing her clothes isn't necessarily going to make much difference to what people think about female characters. She's a made-up mouse, so I don't think it's going to have a significant effect. And, I mean, there's nothing wrong with wearing a dress anyway. It's not like she can't still do amazing things, whatever clothes she wears. Focusing too much on the clothes takes away from the fact that female characters can do amazing things rather than just about what they wear.
Well, you know what? Both of you had roughly the same length of time used there for your debates. But, James, who's convinced you?
Well, this is a really tricky one. I think strong arguments on both sides. I do agree with Anna that even though people might say this is just a cartoon character, why do we have to worry about what clothes they wear? It does matter and it will kind of influence. She's a role model, of course. I think maybe we don't have to go for the dress or the trousers. We could have a bit of a mixture. Maybe sometimes she could wear the dress, sometimes she could switch it up. Maybe that's a good compromise.
Get some dungarees, perhaps.
Yeah, ideal. But I think I'm probably going to side with Anna on this one. Sorry, Gus.
All right, well, poor Gus. Well, listeners, let us know what you think. You're the important people here. Go and respond to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/polls. Or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk with a video clip explaining which side of the debate you support and why. So last week, we asked if CBBC should go to be online only. The overwhelming answer was no, with 82% of you saying the channel should stay on live TV.
Reader Olivia definitely didn't want CBBC to go online only. She sent us this message.
Hi, The Week Junior team. I'm Olivia, and this is my opinion on this week's big debate. Well, I think no, because then children will be having to watch it online, and that means that young children will have to go on devices and online and on the internet, which might not be very safe for children this young, and at ages around 4 or 5, the internet may have some content that is not appropriate for that age.
One PopJam user said, CBBC should be removed from live TV because the BBC needs to save money for more important things such as news and popular sporting events to appeal to a wider audience.
However, one PopJammer who wanted CBBC to stay on live TV told us no, because some people can't afford to use online TV services, and CBBC Live brings all watchers together at the same time.
Wow, I love those opinions. All right, this is your chance to get involved. Grab a grown-up, record a video telling us what you think of this week's debate and send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. We might play it out on next week's show. All right, before we go, we need to recap that real or rubbish story. James, can you remind me what it was, please?
So this was the story about our dinghy daredevil who took an inflatable dinghy that you might use at a beach and turned it into an aircraft, which he sailed through the skies of the Pacific Ocean to take photographs of some remote islands.
Now, I think you're trying to trick me here. I think this seems a bit too ridiculous, this story. So I think the real story is that he made his own dinghy boat, but it didn't fly.
Ah,
I'm
okay.
Thinking it as I you say it out loud. I think you're trying to trick me.
You think it was just a boat?
Or... So I'm going to say this story is rubbish. That's what I'm going to go with.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie, I am very confused.
Yeah, you sound confused. Is that your final answer?
Yeah, I'm going to say it's rubbish, I'm going to say you're tricking me, and I'm going to say it's some kind of variation of what you've told me.
Okay, very interesting. Well, drum roll please. It is in fact real. Ben Neal, the photographer from Australia, did actually turn an inflatable dinghy into an aircraft. He used it to take these amazing photographs, and they're going to be shared on a website called Gallery Earth, and the idea is to raise money for charity. But yeah, he said he did it for kind of his love of photography as a way of taking to the skies in an unusual way, I guess. So, sorry, Bex.
Oh, man, I'm sorry I doubted you. I thought you were trying to hoodwink me there. Oh, man. All right, well, maybe next week I'll get it right. Before we go, there's just one more thing we want to tell you about. Now available is the Week Junior newsletter. It's an info-packed email for the grown-ups who subscribe to the magazine and who want to know the highlights of each issue and some behind-the-scenes secrets. If you're a grown-up subscriber, you can sign up right now at theweekjunior.co.uk/newsletter. All right, that's it for this episode of The Week Junior Show. A big thank you to Anna, Gus and James. Remember, you can drop us a comment on PopJam at The Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe or follow us wherever it is you get your podcasts. See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Week Junior Show, which is made by the same people that make The Week Junior magazine. You can get a free trial of The Week Junior by heading to theweekjunior.co.uk/podcast and using the code PODCAST at checkout.